Hello again, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. In this episode, you're about to hear that Doug and I recorded earlier this week, where we dive into three timeless Bulls topics: the potential trade of Coby White, the progression of Modest up to this point in the season, and finally, the rumored trade sending Vooch to the Golden State Warriors. Before we get into all that, though, I wanted to take a moment to share a brief comment on Derrick Rose and the retirement of his number on Saturday night at United Center. Because moments like this don't come around often, and Derrick Rose deserves his own pause. From 2011 to 2018, LeBron James won 8 straight Eastern Conference titles. During these years, there was only one legitimate and consistent threat to his reign: our Chicago Bulls. For the first 7 of those seasons, the Bulls produced more wins than every Eastern Conference team but the Heat. Well, what happened? In the playoffs, the Bulls suffered an unprecedented 5 season-ending injuries to 5 different key starters: Rose in 2012, Noah in 2012, Deng in 2013, Gasol in 2015, and Rajon Rondo in 2017. All of these injuries occurred with the Bulls either tied or winning their playoff series, all in round 1, with the notable exception of the Gasol injury, which occurred with the Bulls up 2-1 versus LeBron's Cavs in the conference semifinal in the 2014-15 season. That stretch of playoff injuries can only be described as a basketball tragedy, but none more so than the injury to Derrick Rose. He essentially missed 3 straight playoffs: 2012, 2013, and 2014. But before that awful day in April of 2012, Derrick Rose brought nothing but pure joy into my life as a Bulls fan. He was easily the most exciting and athletic player we've seen since Michael Jordan. From the moment he stepped on the floor as a rookie, he was a joy to watch. And it didn't take long before he became the most important integral piece of a true NBA championship contender. He was the best player on that team. No one could touch him on the offensive end. Everything ran through him. He made everything go. That combination of speed, power, and fearlessness, some of the moves he made, the way he attacked the rim, the way he controlled games, it was incredible. I treasured every single one of those moments. And even after his journey took him to other teams and other uniforms, I always cheered for Derrick Rose, and I always will. Congratulations, D. Rose. You are the 5th Bull to have your number retired, and you will never be forgotten. As long as people walk into the United Center and watch Bulls basketball, your legacy will live on. Go Bulls.
Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win!
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day, big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind.
Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss, from the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago on a frigid 6-degree Monday afternoon. I look to my right, and lo and behold, it's the great one, Doug Tonis. How you doing, brother?
I was going to go live in the dream, but I just watched the Bears get eliminated last night, so I guess I'm not dreaming as much as I could. But good.
Do you feel that bad?
No, I mean, I don't feel that bad.
It was an incredible
year. It was an incredible year. It was a great year. It was a good game. You know, even that play where we took it to overtime, you know, we were all jumping up and down and chest bumping each other and stuff. It was, you know, it was cool. So it was good. You know, just disappointing ending. So I think even though I feel we would have gotten slaughtered by Seattle next week anyway, it would have been nice to just make it one more game if we could, and I could get together with friends one more time for football. But yeah, great season by the Bears.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you on that. But I mean, I don't know how – I am so freaking excited about the future of this organization when you consider the offensive talent and you look at guys like Caleb Williams and Rome and
– Loveland.
Yeah, Loveland. I mean, those three alone, even Menungai, I thought showed a lot this year as a 7th round pick. I mean, you get a defensive – what we need is one more guy that can rush the passer. And if you get that alone, I think we're going to be in – damn good shape. So I'm pretty freaking excited. And the offensive line was incredible this year. I mean, so everybody should be happy overall. I mean, yeah, it sucked we lost. I was bummed out for a good 12 hours, but in retrospect, what a season for the beloved Bears. And, you know, I would give my left arm for a season like that for the Bulls.
Yes, I mean, I wouldn't give an arm, but I'd be pretty excited if we got one. I will keep both arms and fingers. I'm not giving the Bulls any body parts, sorry. I love the way we talked for like 20 minutes about keeping this episode high and tight, and I immediately like off-tracked us with Bears talk at the beginning, so you know that's it's good for me. I'm right, and I told you I need to be railed in.
I do have a quick question. Would you give a pinky toe for a Bulls title?
No.
Are you serious? Oh man, that sucks. Really?
You would disfigure yourself for a Chicago Bulls title.
It's a pinky toe. It's not like a big deal.
I mean, do they put me under and take it off, or do like you get to go at it with like a hatchet?
I guess it would make it a little bit more difficult if it was a hatchet to make the call. But absolutely, if they're going to take you under and you come out and the Bulls get a title, think what it'd do for the city, DT. Come on, man. Give up that toe.
Courtside seats? If I get courtside seats in the game-winning game and they can take the toe while I'm under anesthesia, then I'll do it.
I'm sick of your qualifiers, bud.
Look, you got to negotiate. Give up the damn toe. You got to negotiate, dude. You got to negotiate. Don't take the first offer.
All right. It's a good idea. Good point. You should write a book on this. All right, man. Let's get into the beloved Bull, since now we're officially professional. As we go into, let's talk about Coby White. So I don't know if you agree with me. There was few people who were a bigger proponent of Coby White, bigger fan than me. I think it's been a lost season. Fortunately, it's been a real bummer how he's played, and it's been inconsistent. I think it's primarily due to the injuries. Leg injuries are never good for a player like him. That said, I think it seems like all the rumors out there, he's likely going to be traded. So I did tweet out a poll that I hope you saw.
I mean, I replied to it. I'll repeat it. So of course I saw it. Oh, okay. I mean, like, Jesus, how do you not even notice I replied to your thing, and you're like giving me a hard time?
I'm shocked that you actually read one of my polls. Regardless, I'm going to read it for the people who haven't heard it. It's highly unlikely the Bulls get a future unprotected first for Coby White, given his inconsistent play this season. What's the minimum in terms of draft capital you'd trade Coby for? A highly protected, i.e. top 20 late first round pick, or multiple second round picks? What say you, Ductonus?
I mean, I think I'd probably want a pick that is maybe like lotto protected, I would consider. But my reply to you was, you can't make this decision in isolation because it depends a lot what your goals are in the next year. So if you are going to rebuild, then I would kind of take whatever I can get for Coby White. If you are going to try to continue to build on what you have and field the best possible team next year, which is what I think AK is going to do, then I would probably keep Coby White and use this season to sign him at a lower deal than he would have otherwise gotten, and then hope he rebounds next year.
So I heard the GOAT talk about this. Would you take a contract, maybe a bad contract, in exchange for a late first-round pick this year?
I would not take a late first-round pick and a bad contract that extends into next year for Coby White.
But you would take a bad contract for an unprotected future first?
I mean, it depends. I mean, how could it be unprotected and be several years out? Like, I don't know what that means. If it's unprotected, you mean like someone's going to give us their 2028 unprotected?
Yeah, 2030.
Yeah, I'd probably do that.
So would I. Goat had a really couple interesting comments on this. Like, he doesn't think, first of all, I do think the Bulls should be able to trade Coby White for a unprotected first-round pick this year. What does that mean? Well, it's going to be the Rockets or the Timberwolves. They don't care if it's unprotected. They're going to be drafting in the 20 or beyond anyhow.
Well, if it's far enough out, they won't be. I mean, if it's far enough out, like you go 2030, it's random. Like you should never project what a team is going to draft in like 4 years. So if you go far enough out, it effectively is a random draw where that pick is.
No, but what I'm saying is they'll give up an unprotected pick this year.
Oh, yeah. They won't care this year. That's still effectively a late pick. Yeah.
So they're not going to be a lottery team. Like the Grizzlies were doing it.
Yeah, sure. Last year. That means nothing.
And then
that means nothing.
They collapse. Yeah. It means nothing. Exactly. So like if the Timberwolves are going to give you an unprotected first, it gets a victory for Acme to say, hey, we got an unprotected first for Coby. But in reality, it doesn't. Everybody knows it's 20 or higher. So who cares, right?
Like unprotected matters if it's a team that's bad, or if it is a pick that's far enough out in the future that a team that's good might be bad at that point in time. Like those are exactly. Those are the times,
and
that
that's
matters.
What I want them to go for. That's what I want them to
we're
go for.
We're not
going to
do that.
I don't think they could get it.
We're not going to do that. We're not even going to consider that. Like at this point, you have to realize that AK is in save my job mode. He can't make moves that are going to make the franchise take a step back. Like he did that last year, like with this idea, we're going to trade these veterans, we're going to take a step back. He's not going to do that again. He's not going to trade Coby White for something that's going to help in 4 years because he's not going to be here in 4 years. So, and no one's going to give you a pick that might be a lotto pick this year for Coby White. So you're either going to get something late this year. I don't know that you could even get something like unprotected in like 4 years, but if you could, AK is not going to make that trade. Like he's just
I
not.
Agree. Yeah. I think that's a smart way to go too. Like I think the Bulls for right now fire him, hire somebody else and say, listen, you got a full rebuild coming in. Trade Coby White for a first round pick 4 years out, 5 years out, even if it's limited protections. I'd rather have like a 2030 first round pick with protection up to 7 or 8 or top 10 protected than have a first round pick this year in the 25, 26 range. Wouldn't you concur on that?
Probably. I mean, you'd want that pick to at least have declining protections over time. You know, you can only go out 7 years. So, you know, the next draft is 26. So you'd have, if it was a 2030, you know, I'd want to get down to top 4 and 31 and, you know, top 1 and 32 if I was going to do something like that where it's like top 8. And then you'd feel then like if that team is top 8 protected, there's a good chance that that pick's going to be, you know, better like the next year, right? Like it's a really bad team if they're drafting in the top 8. So, you know, then they have a chance of being really bad the year afterwards too. So, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Like we're talking about a thing that'll never happen.
Yeah. What I think he's going to do, like just Minnesota is a team that's been associated with him. And I think he's a great fit there. And I think it'd be a great trade for Minnesota to bring him in. I think they're going to trade like Rob Dillingham or even Terrence Shannon Jr. and a couple second rounders. I don't think I love Terrence Shannon Jr., but he's 25 years old. I think he actually might be older than Coby White for all I know. I know he was born in 2000. So he's 25, probably maybe going on 26. I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, Kobe is almost 26. He's like 25 and like a month away from 26. So whatever. Yeah, but they're effectively the same 26. Age. So
but, yeah. So like yeah, the only thing you're getting is a guy in a cheaper contract, right? Obviously,
who's nowhere near as good. He's on a cheaper contract, but he's nowhere near as good.
Might be older. It sounds like an accurate.
Yeah, I don't.
That would probably.
I would not be excited about that. That's a deal that like looks better than it is because you're getting two guys that people will be like, oh, look, these are recent draft picks on rookie deals. So they have upside, but I don't believe either of those guys have real meaningful upside. Like I wouldn't want either of those guys. So,
it's got to be Joan Behringer for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I would, if he's in there, I would move Coby for him.
Yes. I'd agree too. And I suspect that's what they'll probably do and maybe get a second rounder, finagle a second rounder and act like that's a big win or like, get a late first round pick for this year in a 2025, 26, which I still think would be a win. I noticed there's a lot of, listening to some of the other shows, a lot of pearl clutching about the Bulls potentially losing Coby White for nothing. How do you feel about that? I'm curious.
I don't think his value is that high. So like, I mean, I hate saying this. I told you this like over a year ago in the summer when he finished the first year of his new contract, trade him now. Because in 2 years, you're going to run into a spot where you don't want to re-sign him on this big money deal. You're not at a point to leverage his skill set in the next 2 years in a way that matters. And he's going to be super valuable to some other team that needs the cheap contract in the production. And so this is one of those asymmetric return scenarios for both teams. Like a team getting a cheap Coby White for 2 years is going to get a ton of value out of him. The Bulls aren't going to get a ton of value out of him. And so you could leverage the difference between those two things to get something real useful. But now you're at the point where Coby's having a bad year. He's only got, you know, this rest of this season on a cheap contract. The team that acquires him is going to have to re-sign him, you know, to whatever his new market value deal is going to be. And so that's just not exciting anymore for on the trade market. And so I think the market's going to be really limited. I'm not going to be beside myself if we give up the opportunity to get pick number 25 in the draft, versus having the opportunity to renegotiate with Coby in the offseason and maybe bring him back on like a cheap deal. Like maybe Kobe's an $18 million player next year and then he's got, you know, healthy calves and then it's a good deal.
Yeah, he's playing really well again. I think he's more than 18. Like, he's to me, like, I'd give him 4 years, the exact same contract that Giddey got. I'd be fine with
that. I wouldn't.
You'd give him less than that?
At this point, really, I think I'm less than that. Like, but whatever. We'll see what the market bears. There's a lot of time left. But based on his year this year, it's like he doesn't add anything to you really other than scoring, and I just don't think those guys are very valuable. Like, he doesn't add anything on defense. He doesn't really add a whole lot in playmaking. I just don't think he's a high enough. I don't think he's a high enough level scorer that, you know, he can live as just a scorer. I do like the fact that I think Kobe is a good team guy and like he would play off the ball. Like, I don't think he would need to play on the ball, and maybe compared to say like Zach LaVine, who, you know, even though he should have been able to play off the ball well, he didn't. I think Kobe is more willing and able to do that. But at the same time, his talent level is nowhere near as high as Zach's. And most of the other flaws of Zach still exist with Kobe. So, yeah. And I guess I would love Zach at a $20 million deal, you know, if he was this age. So, but yeah, I think it's around, to me, it's around 20. I don't think I'd go over that. I just don't. So that's me. I agree. I know you're really high on Kobe generally and think this is a down year and you'd pay him more. You'll pay what the market will bear, though, if he's an unrestricted free agent, right? You no longer can hold him over a barrel like like Giddey. He's just going to take the best deal he can.
$30 million, a dollar over $30 million. I don't think it's worth it, and I'd let him walk. And it'd be disappointing not to get anything in return for him. But
if the return is so low, it doesn't matter that much, though. You can't.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel strongly about it.
Remember this happened with Ben Gordon.
The problem. Yeah, Ben Gordon's a good comparison. The problem with Kobe is we just waited too long. Like, we waited too long to see the obvious that this problem was going to come, and now we're in a boat where, like, you're just kind of got lukewarm alternatives no matter what you do. Like nothing we do is going to be amazing at this point. We're gonna get a mediocre draft pick, or we're gonna get Kobe White back on a mediocre contract. Like, so you have lukewarm results. That's what's going to happen. Regardless, you're not gonna. You've missed the point where maybe there was a chance to get really good results.
Would you take a player in return who's making about $20 million a year, somewhere in that range, $20 to $25 million a year, or maybe even less than that just for contractual reasons, who's probably just an average player at best, Doug, you know, probably in the same age range with a longer-term contract, like so 2 or 3 years that's out a little bit more in exchange for a mid to late first-round pick?
Like, we're giving up a pick?
So you're giving up the flexibility, right?
We're giving up a draft pick in this scenario?
No, you're not giving up a draft pick. No, we're getting the draft pick. In order to get the draft pick, we have to take on this contract that's maybe 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, like it's like a Kevin Huerter level player, but overpaid. Like something like that.
Yes, that's a good comparison. Kevin Huerter, let's pretend he was signed for two more years.
That's a tough one. Probably because we're going to be up against the cap, and then we're not going to be able to use any cap space anyway. It depends where the draft pick is. Depends if the player fit a need. Like, if you had a version of that, like, say it was like Zach Collins, who I think is overpaid, but if he was like healthy all the time and you're like, well, he's overpaid, but he fits a need we have. Like, you might be like, yeah, okay. You know, like something like that, I don't know. It's hard without knowing who the player is, you know, like, and how middling, how good or bad the player is. Like, you know, if you had like a rim running defensive center that was overpaid by like, say, $10 million, you'd be like, well, we still really need that player, even if they're overpaid, you know, and that would maybe be okay for us. But if it was like a guy who's like a point guard that's overpaid and is competing with Giddey, then that no longer makes a lot of sense.
I think you'd have a better chance kind of slightly overpaying for maybe a free agent who can kind of cover a couple of those warts.
We didn't have this on our topic list, but if you want to go off tangent, like Walter Kessler.
Go ahead, please.
Walter Kessler is the guy.
Oh, yeah. Target. Walker. Yeah. I love him. I'm a huge fan. And that's a guy I would absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. How much would you pay for him?
Did I just call him Walter?
Yeah, he called him Walter.
My bad. You know what? I saw Patrick Williams in a Walter Payton jersey today, rewatching the game from last night.
I was like,
this was the best Patrick Williams sighting I've seen in like forever. He's like wearing a Walter Payton jersey on the bench. Like, this is the happiest I've been to see Patrick Williams. Yeah, Walker Kessler. I think would be the guy target. Like, hyper efficient offensive player, does nothing though, right? You know, like only dunks, plays completely within himself, doesn't take anything other than give me baskets. Looks like he can really impact the game defensively and is going to be very low usage offensively, but the usage he does have is going to be like very efficient. I think that's a player that would really help us a lot.
No doubt. I actually think that's exactly what you need. You need a front court version of Okoro, a guy who doesn't need shots, who just plays D, good connector, really smart player, plays aggressively. If you had that and you kept Kobe and Josh, I actually think the ceiling is higher than most people think for the Bulls. I really do. I just think they're so poor in the front court defensively. It's really hard to even be a 500 team. It's kind of amazing to me that they are this close to 500 with how bad they are in the front court. And I know I banged this drum for a while. It sounds like we had a back and forth, I think, on this on Twitter. I don't remember the exact back and forth, but
well, I thought you agreed with me. You made a comment to a certain degree, and then I replied to it, and then you didn't read my reply. Or reply to it. So that was our back and forth. Just like my reply to your poll.
What's the gist of it for the
audience? I think what you said was, I probably made fun of you more than I should have. I think you did actually reply to me. What you said was like a front court defensive player would help the team a lot. You know, we're so mid. And I said, a front court player would just make us be mid and better mid. But like our real problem is the overwhelming lack of star talent. And until you solve that problem, like your outcome is mid. You can't just get a bunch of good players and be more than mid. So I agree. Like the Kessler plus Kobe, Okoro and Giddy and Modest plan, you know, that you just mentioned. Like I think that's like maybe the best reasonable outcome the Bulls could do with what will be available this offseason to maximize what this team can be. And I think the outcome of that though is still probably like mid 40s if everyone stays healthy, then is like the maximal outcome. Maybe upper 40s.
47, 48
wins. If everyone stays healthy. Like that's the maximum outcome.
And Kobe gets back to his normal self.
Yeah, and Kessler is out all year. Kobe's not out, but he's been banged up. Giddy's banged up this year. Like, I mean, hoping that whole group stays healthy is a stretch too, right? And you still got Trey Jones who can spell an injury for either Giddy or Kobe for a period of time. So you'd have some stuff, but you're going to lose a lot of the other depth you have, you know, this offseason. You'd still have Jalen Smith, who I think would be a nice rotation big. So, you know, if you had those five and then the, you know, Smith and Trey Jones at least are going to be
Noah Essengay.
Dude.
Noah Essengay will be coming back.
Noah Aplaya is what he's going to be next year. I don't know. That was probably not great, but he's not going to be a factor.
Very well done.
Yeah, that was a stretch. It's the best I could do off the fly.
My actual tweet for the audience was, the Bulls' best defensive answer on 6'10 Michael Porter Jr. was 6'5 Isaac Okoro, as it was on 6'10 Paolo Banchero. Until the Bulls find a front court player who can effectively handle these tough front court assignments, this team's guaranteed to be mid at best. And I basically tweeted that to just point out like an excellent defensive play from Okoro who was guarding Michael Porter Jr. Just to, you know, just point out again subtly that Okoro does these little things that don't show up on the stat sheet. And that definitely didn't. He didn't do anything there, but he just had a great contest. And you said, as long as we delude ourselves into plans to mitigate small weaknesses and not overwhelming lack of star talent, we will be mid at best. Good front court defender would just make us a better mid team. My reply to that was, our front court is not a small weakness. We have no above average defenders outside of Collins, who never plays for any team with above average size. You can't scheme or pace your way out of that when it matters. I think we're both right on what we're all saying here. I think we're both kind of.
Yeah, I don't think there's a major picture. Major gap there. Maybe what I'll say.
You're just being snarky.
A little. Well, I think I'm being accurate. It's like I've said for a long time, I would be making
so
moves.
Was I.
I'd be making moves to maximize like higher leverage results. And I think what you said is also the way to maximize the path that AK is actually going to take. Right, like he's not actually going to make high leverage moves. So if we put ourselves into the AK restriction box where those moves are off the table and you're like, how do you make the best moves that the Bulls might reasonably do? I think you've nailed it. Of the things they could reasonably do and will reasonably do while trying to be as good as they can, fixing the front court defense would probably be the biggest thing that would help them, that they could reasonably do on the path they will likely take.
And that means sending Vooch on his way and replace him with Walker Kessler, which I think would be the right move, despite all the love and the outpouring for his really nice offensive output recently.
Yeah.
But again, defensively, he's still a complete disaster. Let's move on to, we got two more topics. Want to get into Mattis. You wanted to talk about Mattis. I did too, because there's been a lot of hand-wringing about his 19 minutes against Utah last week in a game which he was freaking awful. I don't know if that gets lost, but he was so bad defensively in that game, and he's had a couple bad moments that I tried to highlight on Twitter. Like, I love
you're the kid. A real Mattis really hater. Player.
I am not a Mattis.
This is like the third podcast.
Why do you keep on throwing
because this up? Is like the third Mattis podcast in a row where you've talked about how bad he is.
Defensively, he's not been good. But he's okay. Fine offensively.
Okay. I mean, I'm just saying, like, every podcast.
I'm not a hater. I'm just calling out facts.
Every podcast. You know what bothers me? Every podcast, you call out negative facts. That's what you do is all the things you don't like about Mattis every show. Look, I agree they're all true. I'm just saying, like, for a guy who's a year and a half in the league, like, it's okay that he's bad at some of these things right now. That's all.
Yeah. All I'm saying is I have flashbacks to when I was coaching a travel team, an eighth grade travel team. We had a seventh grader on the team. His name is Christian. Everybody who knows this will listen, immediately know what I'm talking about. Fantastic offensive player. Probably the best shooter on the team. Hit a lot of threes, did a lot of flash plays, dribbled through his legs really nicely. On the defensive end, the stuff that people just watch the game don't even notice. He was a complete train wreck. Never boxed out his man. Always gave up rebounds. Not physical, horrible defensively, cost us games. So the parents and some of the friends were like, why doesn't he get more playing time? And everybody in the know would realize this guy's not good defensively. He's horrible and he needs to get better if he's going to want to earn more playing time. That's kind of like, I feel like Billy and a lot of the biggest Mattis backers. He's been so bad at boxing out and little off ball stuff that I tried to highlight. I get irritated with it because it's just like people are acting like he's Billy cutting his minutes. Is like he's still playing what 27 to 30 minutes per game, and in a game he played 19 and Patrick Williams played 23. I would argue that if we can get Patrick Williams playing decently and just get his carcass off the roster somehow in a trade, I'd rather have that than worry about Mattis playing 30 minutes when he's playing as bad as he did. Go on, Doug. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, I mean, you owe me so many interruptions because I interrupt you so often that I you don't even have to apologize.
You're right.
I'm like ahead on the interruption thing, like 1,000 to 1. Like I'm terrible. It's from like 20 years of doing a solo podcast. I would just say this, like, I think one, you can't make Patrick Williams be good because he stinks. And any minute he plays is a wasted minute in a sense, unless there's just no one else available. And so in that sense, I would rather have Mattis playing badly on the floor than Patrick Williams doing anything. Like, I just don't care about any minute Patrick Williams plays. If we have enough guys out, he can play a minute, like, that's fine. Like, but not because something good is going to come of it. Like, he's awful, and he's never going to be anything other than awful, and that just is what it is. So, but otherwise, like, yeah, I don't care that Billy benches Mattis in a game he's playing terrible for some period of time. Like, his overall minutes this year are fine. So I think it's close to about 28 a game, like you mentioned. And so this is like an aberration, and it wasn't a game he played really bad. And maybe we're going to say, like, look, this is all the bad stuff you're doing. We're going to go over it in film, and we're going to hope you do better. And if you don't, you're going to get benched again. And if that is what it takes to inspire him, then so be it. And, you know, people respond differently to different types of coaching, right? You know, we each have two kids, and I don't know if both of your kids are, like, totally different. Like, my two kids are totally different in what they need.
Yeah, mine are,
and
for the most part.
And as a parent, you kind of adapt to, like, what does your kid need? Like, one kid is, like, maybe they need you to kind of, like, just baby them a little bit because they're so insecure that, like, with they can't take any criticism. And maybe one kid is like, if you don't give me, like, hard truths, I'm just going to, like, just ram forward in the wrong direction forever. And, yeah, I don't know how Mattis is to coach on the inside or whatever, but, like, you know, just looking at these two guys, Mattis seems like someone you can probably coach hard, and Patrick Williams seems like someone you probably have to coach with kid gloves because he's so fragile. So, you know, who knows? Like, I just don't think the same approach applies to everyone. Like, when I played tennis, I didn't play basketball in high school, but in tennis, I was like, you need to treat me with kid gloves. If you gave me harsh criticism, I just, like, mentally folded. Like, that's just who I was. Like, if I just couldn't take it. I was so hard on myself. If you were also hard on me, it was a disaster. And there were other guys I played with who it was, like, the opposite. Like, you just had to be hard on them or, like, never sunk in. And so that just is what it is. I'm not saying one is better than the other. Like, I just describe myself as a mental wuss. So, like, you know, but that's the reality of it. Like, you know, is what it is. So different approaches. And I think it was fine. You know, Mattis seems like he needs the way he's being coached. I'm not upset about that, but yeah, not with Patrick Williams getting minutes. He's worthless, dude. Don't bring that up.
Well, did you see the play that I highlighted in the Nets game in the first few minutes with Matas, where I highlighted the defensive play that I don't get it. It's like a year and a half into this, dude. You got to figure this out. Like there was a pick and roll, which all teams want Vooch in pick and roll, and Claxton cuts to the basket, and Okoro does the right thing, comes over. He's 6'5 on a 6'11 guy. And you just show Matas, he's way too freaking slow to get over to help on this. He's just watching it. And if anybody hasn't seen it, just go to my Twitter handle and watch it. This is immediately the first game after Utah. Like, I know this has been talked to him about this. He's got to be faster than that. I don't know. My frustration with him, I people have been talking like he's been playing great last 10 games. I looked it up. Doug, what do you think he's shooting? What are his shooting metrics from, you know, from the field, from three, and from the free throw line in the last 10 games? Based on the 17.6 points that he's averaging per game, what do you think it is? In the last 10 games, he's averaging 17 points, over 17 points.
I'm going to be cheating a little bit with you, only because I was in an argument with someone today about Matas on Twitter. And so I didn't look up the exact last 10 games, but I looked up a lot of the recent games, and I would guess it's like probably like 43% from the field.
45.
And
32% from three.
And very low from three. And I only know that because I looked it up, you know, very recently when this person was like, this guy's playing really great. Now it's like, and this kind of gets to where I was going to say, I wanted to kick in on a modest thought for you. So this was the basis of this argument I had on Twitter. And, you know, the person I was discussing with basically said, hey, we need to remove Coby White from the roster in order for Matas to have enough usage to develop his skills. And I said, you don't remove a good player to make a different player better. Like, if Matas is going to be a really good player, then he'll get there. Like, removing Coby is not going to be in his way. Coby is a high usage right now. But in my opinion, Coby would lower his usage happily if other people stepped up. Like, he's shown the willingness just to be the guy who's off the ball and is a floor spacer. And, you know, he's still a good bailout scorer that I don't think Matas is really going to be in that role anytime soon. Giddy certainly isn't great in that role. You know, so he's a guy who can get a shot when you need one. And so sometimes he takes a lot of low percentage shots because that's just the role. He's the best low percentage shot taker we have. And that's one of the things like really great teams have, is they have a guy who can take, you know, that end of shot clock shot and get you a good look. And Kobe's the best we have at it, but he's only, you know, he's pretty bad at that compared to the best guy in most teams, you know, but he's the best we have at it. Everyone else we have is way worse. So, you know, like, I don't think removing Coby helps Matas any. I don't think Matas needs more touches. I think he just needs to do more with what he has and just continue to learn and grow.
Maybe he's saying, you know, like, look at the player who's kind of somewhat similar to him at that age, although this guy was a lot better defensively than Matas, was Mikal Bridges. Well, first of all, Mikal, I think, was much older. I think he was 21 when he came into the league. But regardless, when he was with the Suns, he was, like, essentially a role player, right? He was a really good 3-and-D guy for the most part. Then he got traded to the Nets, and he was suddenly, you know, in the one spot and played like a star. But those teams weren't good. Like, you're not going to be a great team if Mikal Bridges is the number one guy on the team. I just don't see enough out of Matas to say, like, he's going to be number one. I don't think he has it in him. And he's still so young. He's 21. But, like, if he's going to be – is he going to be the best player? Usually I feel this way. Those kind of guys – I mean, there's always exceptions. Jalen Brunson comes to mind. There's guys that, you know, kind of have a late – man, this guy's an alpha, right? But I'd say more often than not, you kind of see the signs in year two. This guy has what it takes to be a one. I don't see it with him. I just don't. I don't want to be a jerk about it. I think he could probably be your top one, a player top three on a really good team. I don't think he's the guy. Do you disagree with me, or is it just too early to tell?
I mean, I don't think he's going to be a number one. I think that'd be unlikely. Possible, but unlikely. Like, we talked about this before. I'd say, like, sub 5% chance, you know, probably sub 2% chance that he's a legit first option. Maybe like 10% chance he's like a legit second type option. And I think he's probably going to be like the really good fourth guy type of option. Or a lot of teams will have two really, really great players, and then like the third, fourth guys are pretty similar. Like they're really good, but they just play different positions. You know, he's got two-way potential, right? Like just being a two-way player makes you really valuable. You know, and he has to get better on defense. You know, you've talked about that a lot. We talked about how he needs to add strength, and that should happen just with time, right? Like he's got a lot of decent instincts. I think that'll just happen with time. His body will get stronger with time. He won't get bullied so much with time. So I expect him to still project into a good defensive player and a good offensive player. And just being a good two-way player is a lot. Like there's not a lot of like good two-way players in the league, especially with his size and length and athleticism. So I think there's like a lot there. But he doesn't seem to have any of the ball skills that you would say this projects into a star player. Like you remember when people were like, we just got to get Patrick Williams more on ball reps. And the two of us were just like arguing like crazy. Like he has no on ball skills. This guy literally cannot dribble. Like the problem with his offense is not that he is not taking isolation reps. It's that he can't. It's like every time he tries to dribble, he turns the ball over. Like Matas isn't that bad, but the reason why he is not dominating a score is not because he never gets the ball on the perimeter. It's because he is not capable of putting the ball on the floor on a consistent basis, beating a guy off the dribble and finishing at the rim. He can do that maybe if he catches a guy off balance. He could do that maybe if he gets the right matchup. But like he is not just like give him the ball and let him go to work good. He's nowhere near that good. And just giving him the ball more is not going to make him that good. Like he needs to just improve his ball handling, improve his moves.
Improve his physique.
Improve his strength. Yeah, like that's just... Like that's just not how it works. Where you're just like, well, just give him reps, and now he's going to be great. Like no, like those other guys, you know, like, and Mikal Bridges, I'd say even in the Phoenix role, like, was probably better suited. You know, like he's gone to New York now, who has other players, and like now in New York, his stats are like much closer to what they were in Phoenix. When you look at his per 36 numbers, and he's settled back into, you know, this good two-way role player. You know, guy, and not this, like, yeah, I can score a lot of points on a really bad team guy. Like, yeah, I think Matas could put up better numbers on a really bad team if you just gave him the ball a lot, but that isn't actually him being a better player. So anyway, that's my thought.
A later version of Pascal Siakam.
Yeah, I think that's a good.
Siakam is never.
That's a good upside comparison.
Upside comparison there. He's never going to be like the best player on a kick-ass team. But he's second best player on the Pacers last year. I think that's the highest upside for Monson. There's nothing wrong with that.
He was the second best player on the Toronto Raptors when they won the title.
Absolutely.
Too, probably. I mean, that team had a lot of like similarly good second best players. Like Kawhi was number one. Van Vliet was there. God, I'm blanking.
Was that
Marc Gasol? I think was their center.
The fat point guard.
Van Vliet.
What's his name?
Oh, Kyle Lowry.
Kyle Lowry, yeah.
So I mean, they had a lot of solid options, but like he was arguably the second best player on that team, and they won the title. But I guess it is like a 2A, 2B, 2C, 2D, 2E type of scenario. They had like five guys who were all about the same. But yeah, the Pacers, they got to the finals. He was clearly the second best guy in the Pacers. So you know, like Matas could maybe be in that kind of role. You know, depending. Like I think Siakam is a really good upside comparison to what he could be. It's hard to imagine him being better than that. And Siakam is, I mean, it's so far radically better defensively, right? Like he's got a long way to go to get to that. But that's maybe the archetype if it all worked out.
The other final point wrapping this up is his like per 36 minute stats. They're remarkably the same as they were last year. Like he hasn't really made this jump that a lot of people are kind of implying that he has. I don't know that's true.
I mean, he moved from 16.4 points. I just pulled up his page. I don't have this memorized, just for clarity. He moved from 16.4 points to 19.2. I think that's a pretty good improvement.
Did his shots go up? I don't have.
Yeah, his shots went up. His overall efficiency is a little bit up. But you know, like taking on a bigger role, taking on bigger usage, like I think that's generally good. His free throw attempts are up quite a bit, you know, showing like more physicality, different types of shots. So I think there's like something there. Like it's not like huge. You'll find often that's like really the case. Like if you look at Kobe White, like he averaged 18 points per 36 minutes his rookie year. You know, and if you look at, I'll pull him up now too.
Well, that's because he had seven incredible games to end that year that was cut short by COVID.
But like his last 3 years, he's averaged 18.9, 22.2, and 23 this year. You know, so like he had the high per minute numbers before, and then they got a little bit better. So like often guys, their per minute numbers often don't go like radically forward if they play like a meaningful amount of minutes. Like kind of the type of player they are, where they're aggressive at trying to score, whatever else. What you look for is to see the improvements in efficiency. And so like for Modest, what I'd be most excited about is like, you got, even though he shot the ball a little bit worse from three, you saw a really big improvement in his ability to get to the free throw line. And that shows like stylistically, he's kind of getting his points by being more aggressive and drawing fouls. So I don't think this is a massive gain. You know, but I think there is something to be said of just he's done it in like more minutes per game and in a larger role, and he's improved in a couple of these areas. I still think that's pretty good. Like, I'm not disappointed with what Modest has done this year. I don't know if you are. I'm content with
this. I'm not. I didn't expect him to have the jump to everybody else.
Yeah, same.
Both you and I were not as high on him as
we both liked him long term, and we both thought people were just getting a little bit out ahead of themselves. And I think that's still,
there's nothing else.
Yeah, there's nothing else to be excited about. Like, you're always, people are super excited about Noah Senge, like, after the draft, including me a little bit. Like, I want to see this kid, and then, like, watched him play in preseason and his few. I'm like, oh, wow. He did not look good at all. And then he got one out for the year. I'm feel like really high probability already, like 80% plus that this guy is just a total draft bust.
Oh, wow. Which is a shame because it was a good draft. Do you got time? We got time. Let's just go one more into the Vooch rumor.
Sure.
About, I've heard various reports on this that it seems like Joe Cawley was the first one to report that he thought the Jonathan Kuminga for Vooch trade was potentially out there. And then it was kind of poo-pooed on by a number of other people. You know, Vooch, to his credit, has played pretty well, I think, lately. Although he hasn't shot it from three very well. Let me just look at it. I had a stat up here to see what his last. Vooch in the past five games, 31 minutes per game, he's shooting 52, 20, 87. 8.6 rebounds per game, 4.8. So 20% from three is appalling. But 20 points per game, 4.8 assists per game. You know, Golden State has to do something. What say you about that potential trade?
I'm not excited for it. I don't know. I have very little hope on Kuminga. I would not pick up his team option next year if I had him on the roster. So I see no reason to trade Vooch for him. I don't think that would help us now. I don't think his skill set is remotely what we need. I don't think he's a change of scenery away from being a really good player like some people seem to think. If we'd made that trade, I would probably decline his team option. And then it would effectively be like nothing. This is going to sound crazy because I'm like the biggest Vooch hater ever. I'd almost rather just like wait to see what happens with Vooch in free agency and maybe bring him back. Like at $5 million a year, God. You know, like not at like a heavy contract and like with the knowledge that you're going to be a backup. Like I would like,
we've officially jumped the shark on this.
I would like Vooch if he was like our backup center and we didn't try and jam shots into him and like other stuff. Like he's been solid this year. Yeah. Well, but it's kind of already has a little bit. Like he's taken a smaller role. He knows who he is, I think, at this point. You know, he's mentioned to Donovan, like, you could play Jalen Smith more than me. Like, this is a Donovan problem. And maybe that's the only thing is like, I wouldn't trust Donovan to actually execute it. But maybe someone else would just pay Vooch more and he could go to a better team that has a bigger chance of contending. So we would never get him cheap. But like, I actually have a desire, a small one, to see if you could get Vooch on a real cheap contract next year. Cause I think that might be possible. Like no one's going to go long years, right? I don't think anyone's going to go big dollars. So like that might be possible. And if you could be the team that got him for like $5 million for like 2 years or something just to hang out, maybe he likes the city. And he would stay here versus going to a contender. Maybe he's got a house here. I don't know what his personal situation is. Like, he just doesn't want to move. Like, I'd kind of be pretty okay with that as a way to have, like, a depth piece.
I would not. Just let me say, last trade deadline, I think he pouted for a good 2 weeks and played awful until the Bulls just started winning enough where he couldn't ignore it anymore. I thought he started this year in a pout mode, had a lot of, especially after that 7-game losing streak. I thought he played terrible during that stretch. And I know a lot of people I respect, a lot of the beat writers love him. And, you know, he is a good player offensively. You know, offensively, he is a really good player. But if he doesn't get traded, I think he's really playing well and putting in a huge effort now to
secure that next contract.
Get a trade done.
I don't think he's going to get a trade done. I think just to secure the next contract.
I think he wants out.
Yeah. I don't care. I was just saying, like, I don't want Kuminga. Like, I don't, maybe just to really shorten it. I don't want Kuminga after this year. So I, like, trading Vooch for him, like, I wouldn't care if we did it because we could just decline his option. The only problem is that if we did it, it would be probably to pick up his option. And then I'm like, Kuminga is like the last thing this team needs. All we need is like another ball dominant, non-shooting, non-defender on this team.
That is absolutely true. I will say too, like, I know I've heard the GOAT and I agree with some of this is, you know, where would this team be if he wasn't on the team? And he did win 4 games with last second shots and he did have a lot of good games there, but I mean, it also counter too. We lost a lot of games just because he's so awful at defending the rim and defending the paint. And we are arguably the worst team in the league at doing that. It's not on him. That's just who he is at 35 years old as a old center.
It's like Brad Miller in his like at end of his career could still give you something.
He was way better defensively. But, I love Brad Miller.
Well, no, but at the very end, not like at the, like, you're thinking of Brad Miller when he was like 32, like where he was still slow.
Look, I'm talking about 2009 Brad Miller when they brought him back from the Kings. He was awesome that year in terms, every time you came on the floor, like in that Boston series, it started out with Tyrus and Noah. They'd get their ass kicked and then Brad Miller comes in and immediately everything, interior defense is solidified. I just think he was way better defensively. I guess that's a good analogy to a certain extent.
How old do you think?
Vooch does bring it offensively.
How old do you think Brad Miller was then, Fred?
In 2009? Oh, my gosh.
Oh, he was 32, crazy. Just the age I said. So, thank you.
There we go. Well done. Well done.
I didn't know that in advance, by the way. I just like, I wonder how old he was. I just looked it up. I'm like, let me just check.
That's crazy. He was 32 that year?
People just didn't age as well back then, right? Like, I think just whatever they're doing health-wise, you know, whether it's the diet, whether it's people just getting better with strength programs and understanding how the human body recovers and the research that's been done over the last 15 years. Like, guys are just lasting longer now, right? Like, that was really common to be starting to be washed at, you know, 32. And now it's like more like 34, 35 is when guys start falling off the cliff instead of like, used to be like over 30, you were nervous. And now, yeah. Like, I don't think that's really true anymore. So a little bit of a different era. Anyway, point is like Brad Miller in a limited role was a pretty good player. I think Vooch could be in a limited role. We are particularly ill-suited to have someone like him because we don't have enough defense up front. And so we do sort of maximize his flaws a little bit too much.
Okay. Well, on that note, DT, we got to bring this big red bus in, and we have some great news for everyone that we can share now. We are officially joining the All City Network. The big red bus is going under the All City Garage, the CHGO Garage, joining in a niche podcast our heroes at the CHGO Bulls and that entire great group. I mean, not officially joining. We're still just doing our own pod like we always do, but it's under that umbrella. So the ads that you hear are CHGO and All City. So please follow those advertisers and buy as much as you can from them and make sure you tell them you heard it at the Big Red Bus, I guess.
Is that how it works? I don't think it works. I mean, I don't think we don't have a code. We have no way for this to get tracked back to us,
right.
Do we?
Good point.
We got to get a code. It's got to be Big Red Bus or the code. We should come up with a really cool code for ourselves. I think yeah, we would need custom. I want to do custom ad reads like Dave.
That would be awesome. He's so good at it.
All those guys are hilarious when they do their ad reads. Like, they're just like so passionate about like RC Cola. And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I just want to do that.
Also, like when the Bulls win, you know that thing they do with Dave where he goes, yeah, Bulls win. You know, that whole thing. Yeah. I love that thing. We got to come up with some, you know what I'm talking about? When the Bulls win, they play you know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea.
Are you kidding me? You don't know this? When every time the Bulls win on the CHGO show, they start out with Dave saying, Bulls win. They played the thing over and over again. And you give it again, give it again. You never heard of that? And he's got that noise he makes. It's hilarious.
Probably only listen after
Doug, you got to start listening to the show again. You probably just skip right through everything and get right to the
To be honest, I do skip over like all the beginning because there's like I don't want to hear the intro song of anyone. Like, I'm like, just get me to where things start. You know, it's, I do that in all shows. Usually there's like some ads at the beginning of most of these shows too. So I'm like, I'm skipping over everything. I'm a terrible person.
Thanks to the Believe group for hosting us for a while, but we're moving to All City and we are just thrilled. Can't wait. Hopefully this will be some appearances. I actually am going to ask them too if I can do a live concert this summer with all my Bull songs that I wrote. What do you think about that, DT? Maybe come in and play the tambourine. I'll bring the guitar. Man, I haven't played you. Did you listen to any of my songs I wrote on the Bulls?
I listened to all of your songs.
Okay. Any comments?
Do you want the comments? I don't think you want the comments. Maybe we should just bring the bus. Yeah, bring the bus in. I don't know that you want like it. Yeah, let me just put it this way. Your style of music is not my style of music. I think you perform them all well, but it's just not like, it's like a little bit too like slow country, like I lost my dog type style to me. Like I just, like, I don't know. It's just not my genre.
Soft rock of the late 70s? Is not
it doesn't style. Even sound like soft rock. It just, it's like, I don't know. Like it's just not my genre. I'm like I'm too much pop. You know, like it's I've got kids. I've listened to too much Taylor Swift. Got two girls. You know, like just not my genre.
All right. Well, I'll work on it. I'll come up with some Taylor Swift-y type songs that will make you listen and become a fan.
Sounds good.
Until next time, let's bring the big red bus in. Go Bulls.
Go Bulls.